Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today I will summarize and review the book, Rubicon, The Last Years of the Roman Republic, by Tom Holland, is a narrative history of how Rome shifted from a fiercely competitive republican system to one dominated by warlords and, ultimately, emperors. Centered on the turbulent 1st century BCE, the book traces the pressures created by conquest, inequality, factional politics, and personal ambition. Holland presents famous figures such as Sulla, Pompey, Crassus, Cicero, Cato, and Julius Caesar, not as marble icons but as players in a brutal political arena where law, religion, and violence were tightly intertwined. The title points to Caesar's irreversible decision to cross the Rubicon, yet the story begins earlier, showing how decades of civil conflict and institutional strain made that moment possible. Written for general readers, it blends vivid storytelling with the core historical debates about why republican norms collapsed and why Romans themselves, step by step, accepted the rule of one man. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, a republic built for rivalry and strained by empire, Holland frames the Roman Republic as a system that rewarded competition among aristocrats and treated political life as a contest for honor, office, and glory. In its early form, this rivalry could be channeled through elections, annual magistracies, and the Senate. But as Rome expanded, victory abroad reshaped incentives at home. Provinces became sources of immense wealth, armies became more professionalized, and successful commanders gained prestige that far exceeded the traditional limits of civic leadership. The book highlights how corruption and patronage intensified when office meant access to provincial revenues and the ability to enrich allies. At the same time, republican ideals such as liberty and shared rule remained powerful, so politicians fought over who best embodied them while bending the rules to win. This tension between traditional forms and new imperial realities helps explain why constitutional mechanisms failed to contain ambition. Holland also emphasizes how religion, omens, and public ritual were not window dressing but tools of legitimacy. As factions escalated their tactics, political disagreement increasingly became existential, and the Republic's celebrated rivalry turned into a pathway to paralysis and, eventually, civil war. Secondly, inequality, populism, and the politics of the street, a central theme is the social upheaval produced by Roman success. Conquest brought slaves, land seizures, and concentrated wealth, while many small farmers struggled with debt and displacement. Holland presents the resulting politics as a volatile mix of genuine reform efforts and ruthless manipulation. Tribunes and popular leaders could mobilize the urban crowd and allied communities, proposing land distributions, grain policies, and citizenship changes that threatened entrenched interests. Senators, in turn, framed such proposals as assaults on tradition and public order. The book shows how popular assemblies became battlegrounds where persuasion was backed by intimidation, and how street violence evolved from sporadic clashes into a regular feature of political life. This environment rewarded demagogues, but it also created an opening for aristocrats who learned to speak the language of the people while serving their own careers. Holland connects these pressures to the breakdown of trust. Once opponents were viewed as enemies of the state, compromise looked like surrender. By linking bread-and-butter grievances to elite power struggles, the narrative explains why stability became harder to maintain and why Romans became increasingly receptive to extraordinary measures and strongman solutions. Thirdly, generals, armies, and the militarization of politics, Rubicon depicts a republic where the decisive political currency gradually became military loyalty. As campaigns grew longer and theaters of war expanded, soldiers depended more on their commanders for pay, plunder, and land grants. This personal bond shifted allegiance away from the state and toward individual leaders, enabling generals to convert battlefield success into political leverage. Holland explores how precedents accumulated, especially as commanders used their troops to coerce elections, threaten rivals, or march on Rome itself. The narrative treats Sulla's seizure of the city as a pivotal moment, proving that force could rewrite law and settle ideological conflicts. Once that line was crossed, later figures could claim necessity or precedent for similar actions. The book also explains why foreign wars mattered. Conflicts in the East and West produced spectacular triumphs and enormous resources that intensified competition among elites. Pompey and Crassus exemplify how wealth and armies could override conventional seniority, while Caesarian ambition shows how a charismatic leader could fuse political messaging with military achievement. Through these arcs, Holland argues that the Republic did not simply collapse, it was hollowed out as military solutions repeatedly replaced civic ones. Fourthly, law, tradition, and the weaponization of the Constitution. Rather than presenting the Republic as governed by a fixed constitution, Holland shows a system held together by custom, precedent, and shared assumptions about restraint. When those assumptions weakened, legal arguments became weapons. politicians invoked ancestral practice, emergency powers, religious vetoes, and procedural tricks to block opponents or justify exceptional actions. The Senate could claim to defend the state while authorizing harsh measures, and popular leaders could claim to defend liberty while bypassing senatorial authority. Holland pays close attention to how public legitimacy was constructed, including the use of omens, auspices, and priestly offices to validate decisions. He also highlights the role of courtroom drama, scandal, and moral posturing, with figures such as Cicero representing the belief that eloquence and law might preserve order even as violence increased. The result is a portrait of constitutional breakdown that feels incremental. Each faction insists it is defending the Republic, yet each step makes the next escalation easier. This topic illuminates why Romans could simultaneously cherish Republican freedom and accept actions that undermined it. By the time open conflict arrived, many citizens had already experienced years of rule by intimidation, making the promise of restored stability dangerously attractive. Lastly, Caesar, the Rubicon, and the irreversible turn toward one-man rule. The crossing of the Rubicon functions as both a dramatic centerpiece and a symbol of accumulated failures. Holland portrays Caesar not as an isolated villain, but as a product of the late Republic's incentive structure, relentless competition, massive debts, the expectation of spectacular success, and the constant fear of prosecution once power slipped away. Caesar's rise is set against the fragility of his rivals, especially the inability of the senatorial leadership and Pompey's coalition to craft a settlement that preserved both dignity and security for all parties. When negotiation failed, the Republic lacked a trusted mechanism to resolve the dispute. The March on Italy thus becomes a culmination of decades in which force had repeatedly settled political questions. Holland emphasizes how quickly events can accelerate once taboo is broken, allies choose sides, institutions freeze, and legitimacy shifts toward whoever can guarantee order. The ensuing civil war, the collapse of old alignments, and the erosion of Republican norms illustrate why the Republic could not simply revert to business as usual after so much bloodshed. In this view, Caesar's gamble exposed the truth that Rome had already outgrown its Republican framework, and that the path toward imperial rule was already being paved by earlier compromises and precedents. In conclusion, this book is best suited to readers who enjoy narrative history, political drama, and the personalities behind major turning points. It will appeal to students of classical civilization, general history fans, and anyone interested in how institutions fail when ambition, inequality, and polarization overwhelm shared norms. The main benefit is perspective. Rubicon makes the late Republic feel recognizable, showing how the erosion of trust, the use of emergency rhetoric, and the personalization of power can turn a stable system into a crisis machine. Readers can apply these lessons to modern civic life by paying attention to incentives, precedents, and the long-term cost of normalizing rule-breaking. Compared with more academic studies, this book offers a fast-moving synthesis that keeps the big picture in view while making complex politics accessible. Compared with purely biographical treatments of Caesar, it gives equal weight to the broader cast and to structural pressures such as militarization and social unrest. It is worth buying because it combines clarity, momentum, and thematic coherence, helping readers understand not only what happened, but why so many Romans came to accept that liberty could be traded for order. If you would like to support Tom Holland, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.